We will call the February 22nd Lawrence Douglas County Planning Commission meeting to order. And Mr. Chaney, we're glad to have you back. Glad to see you're doing better. Let's see, first item. Receive and amend and approve the minutes from the January 25th, 27th. Planning Commission, were there any? No? Okay. Any motions?
Move to approve the minutes as they are.
Okay. Moved by Commissioner Carter.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Finkeldey. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Motion carries. Oh, I'm sorry.
Lisa.
Opposed? Abstain. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 4, and 2 abstentions. Student in the affirmative. Great. 6 voted for.
6.
Four.
6.
Four. Sorry.
6 voted. You added the 12 there. Greg's not very good.
Are there any committee reports from this past month? I know our committee didn't meet. Any other? Commissioner Harris?
Comprehensive Plans Committee will meet this Friday at 7:30 in the morning.
Okay.
That's dedication.
All right. Sheila?
Communications. This afternoon, we posted, or actually this morning, we posted a staff memo that goes with item number 4, the CUP for Enright Gardens, which includes some additional communications related to fire protection and roads, and a letter from a nearby neighbor. And there was also a letter posted for item number 5 that came from the League of Women Voters related to the text amendment for environmentally sensitive lands. That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there a disclosure of any ex parte communications or any abstentions this evening from any of the items? All right, seeing none, we will move into agenda item number 1, which is a rezoning request from agricultural to RS7, property located at 1764 East 1300 Road. Michelle?
Good evening, Michelle Liner, planning staff. Oh, this is dark. This is a subject property right here. Very hard to see. This is North Iowa Street right here. Sorry. just some key points. The property was recently annexed. They had a septic system that failed, and they were able to hook up to some existing sanitary sewer that runs along the back of the property. The rezoning would assign a property would assign a city zoning designation as it sits today. The A zoning designation is a county zoning designation. Horizon 2020 identifies a property which is in service area 1 as low density residential use. The proposed rezoning would be consistent with that, in addition to being consistent with the existing use. Staff recommends approval of the rezoning from A to RS7 and recommends forwarding the recommendation to the City Commission.
Thanks, Michelle. Any questions for Michelle at this time? Is there a presentation by the applicant at all?
I'm here, but I'm not opposed to it.
Okay. Great. This is a public hearing item. If you wish to speak, it's 3 minutes for an individual, 5 minutes if you represent a group. Anyone wish to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. Bring it back for discussions and motions and or motions. Commissioner Single.
I would move that we vote to approve the request to rezone this from A to RS7 in accordance with staff recommendations.
Seconded by Commissioner Blazer. Any discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Motion carries 8-0, student in the affirmative. Thank you. All right. Item number two would be Todd.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. This is a request to initiate an update to Chapter 8 of the Comprehensive Plan, which is the transportation section. As stated in the memo, basically this is being done to better coordinate transportation planning and land use planning and bring the Comprehensive Plan in line with the latest version of the Long Range Transportation Plan, Transportation 2030. So that's the request by staff, is that you formally tell us to initiate this update.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
It is a public hearing.
Oh, gosh.
So we'll open the public hearing. Anyone wish to speak on this item? Seeing none, close the public hearing and bring it back to Commissioner Finkeldine.
I'll move that we initiate the comprehensive plan update for Chapter 8.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Harris. Any discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Motion carries 8-0, student in the affirmative. Item number three is rescind minimum maintenance designation for a portion of East 1800 Road in the Palmyra Township. Hart. Is there any way we can get that brighter? Or do you guys know how to? I'm just thinking for the audience. Well, that's the Elmo.
There's not a brightness.
That's okay. I just.
There's a lamp, a button, but I don't know what that does.
That's okay. I just thought if someone knew, that's fine. Go ahead, Bart.
Good evening, Bart Rudolph, Transportation Planner. This is a request from Palmyra Township to rescind the minimum maintenance designation from East 1800 Road, specifically the part that begins 480 south of North 800 Road to the point 1400 south of North 800 Road, for the purpose to issue a building permit for the property just to the south here. Staff recommends approval of this request and asks that the commission sends a recommendation to the county commission on that behalf.
Okay, thank you, Bart. Any questions for staff at this time? And no communications were received?
No communications.
Great. We'll open the public hearing. Is there anyone in the public which wishes to speak on this item? Yeah, come on up. Just state your name and sign in, because Denny takes the minutes. So, yeah, just sign in right up there.
Sorry. Oh, I see. Sorry. First thing. Dan Wilcox, and I live actually in the minimum maintenance area.
Okay.
And I was just curious on if you do recommend that, which it looks like you're going to recommend it, which I'm for the road to be maintained. Who is going to be liable for the cost of upgrading the road?
It's the township.
The Palmyra.
The township itself. Will that be pushed on to the homeowners that are currently on the road?
I don't believe
so. Okay, so I was just kind of curious on.
Yeah. And I'm not real familiar with the process, but I mean, Bart, I don't know if you want to.
It should fit within their budget. It shouldn't be any additional cost to the homeowners on that road.
Also, well, I guess I just wanted to say that I'm very much for the road to be changed to
maintain. Yeah.
Because our kids can't get picked up from the school bus because of that.
Oh, really?
We live in there. But thank you.
Thank you for coming out tonight. Any other public comment on this item? ask, I'll do it at the next, because I don't think he's going to vote on this one. Okay. Seeing none, I will close the public comment. Commissioner Harris, yes.
I move that we recommend that the minimum maintenance designation on the road in item number 3 be rescinded and send that recommendation to the County Commission.
Commissioner Cheney, or Commissioner Cheney seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Motion carries 8-0. Student in the affirmative, and Commissioner Dominguez abstaining. Very good. As with our new bylaws, do you have any any ex parte communication?
No.
Okay. Very good. Item number 4, CUP for our conditional use permit for 2351 North 400 Road. And Harry Miller.
Well, Mary Miller, planner with the Lawrence Douglas County Planning Office. And this item is a request to amend an existing CUP for the property at 2351 North 400 Road to permit the addition of a reception facility. The property is located in the southeast portion of the county. It's about a half mile west of the Douglas County, Johnson County line, and about 2 miles north of US 56. It is outside of the 3 mile area of influence for Baldwin City. This shows the existing property. It's hard to tell, but outlined in blue are the three parcels that are included in the CUP request. In December of 2001, a CUP application was submitted to permit retail sales in addition to the sales from the greenhouses. Greenhouses are a permitted use in the A district. However, they were having accessory sales of items that were not produced on the property, such as pots, and the CUP was granted to permit those retail sales. It was limited to 3,500 square feet of retail sales. The area that's circled is the building that they wish to convert to a reception facility. And they indicated that they intended to use it also for agricultural and gardening educational meetings, and then also for small gatherings and larger reunions and receptions, which would be primarily on Friday nights or on the weekends. And they also indicated that they expected the large events to take place outside of their retail hours and their operating hours for the greenhouses, just so that they would be able to handle all the activity on site. The property is located in a rural area that is zoned agricultural, and the primary land uses are agriculture and rural residential. The location of the facility in the interior of the site provides a natural buffer. There is a property north of North 400 Road, but it's buffered from this facility by the greenhouses. And then there are is a residence quite a ways to the east, which would be buffered by the trees in the distance. And then to the west, there's also a property, but it's over a quarter mile away and would be buffered by the distance and the tree cover. So the buffering should minimize any negative impacts to any neighboring properties by noise or light. This is the proposed site plan showing additional parking for the reception facility. Currently, 18 parking spaces are required, and an additional 40 would be required for the reception for a total of 58 parking spaces. And there's also an area designated just south for overflow parking. It would not be graveled, but for really large events, there could be parking here. And therefore, there'd be no need to have parking on North 400 Road, which is one of the concerns that the fire chief had. He wanted to make sure there'd be no parking. And in the memos, we actually recommended perhaps adding a note to the plan stating that there would be no on-street parking on North 400 Road to clarify that. And the applicant had indicated that they'd been contacted by a school about perhaps hosting an all-night prom party at this facility. And we would recommend that all parties or all events conclude at 12 midnight, excluding cleanup time, and that any all-night parties would require approval by the County Commission. And that way there would be a public notice to neighboring properties and the all-night events. There shouldn't be too many of those, and that way they could be have a special range of approval. During the review of this request, we provided this to the County Zoning and Codes Office, and they did not return any compliance issues. Therefore, this would start the review process over. We could see that as a compliance review of the original CUP, and we would recommend that the review be due in 5 years, and that the CUP would expire in 10 years from today as one total CUP. We did contact the Palmyra Township about the additional traffic on North 400 Road. It's located, as you can see by the small blue dot, in close proximity to two arterial roads, but travel on local roads would be necessary to access a property. And the photograph in the bottom right corner shows the state of North 400 Road. It's a narrow road with shallow ditches. The township trustee indicated that she did not feel her road crews would have any difficulty maintaining the road. She did recommend that they do a dust treatment to prevent dust before the events. And, when I contacted the fire chief, I didn't get his response back before the staff report went out in the packet. So his primary concern was that there be an additional access from this aerial. You can tell there's one, it's two access points, but they basically constitute one access into this facility. And he recommended a second access either to the east or the west so that his fire trucks would have an alternative route into the site. And with the letters that were attached with the staff memo, the applicant contacted the fire chief since I talked with him, and they are discussing the possibility of installing the additional access. And so at the end of the staff memo, there was a revised condition stating that if the fire chief determines another access is necessary, that the site plan would be revised to show the location, and it would also be per the county engineer's approval. And the applicant provided information in the letter also attached with the staff report that they had talked with Sandy Elliott, the Palmyra Township trustee, about the condition of North 400 Road, and she indicated that it is in the township's plans to widen the road and to improve the ditches as soon as weather is permitting. So the updates should be taken to the road that would be necessary to accommodate the traffic. And so staff is recommending approval of the CUP with the revised conditions as noted in the staff report and forwarding it to the County Commission with a recommendation for approval.
Commissioner Finkelstein.
Mary, remind me, I know we've done a couple other event centers. Is midnight the time we've put on all of the last couple we've reviewed?
I believe that is a pretty standard time
frame. I was thinking that. I just wanted to be sure we were being consistent. I assumed we were, but I just couldn't remember. Thank you.
Commissioner Carter. Yeah.
I'm just curious, when you talk about the dust treatment, it's before each event?
It would depend. If they wanted to do a dust palliative, which is the chemical that you put on the road, that would be done probably once a season, or as the applicant's letter indicated, it might be necessary to reapply it when the road is graded. The applicant suggested perhaps they would put a water, you know, spray the road with water prior to the events in order to keep the dust down. And so it's just whichever
and
one.
That's adequate. Just spraying it with water is fine.
I would assume so.
Okay. I just.
Mary, the 1,000 feet notification listed here, is that the same for the CUP itself?
Yes, it'd be the same notification
which
area.
Is about a quarter mile.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I guess my question, I just want to make sure we didn't have any neighbors in outlying counties like we've had on
no,
the,
they're all in Douglas County, yeah.
That we didn't notify before we took action on this. So, okay. Thank you. Commissioner Rasmus.
You know, if you're suggesting that there be a midnight curfew, why are you also suggesting that then they can do the all-night events? I mean, it seems inconsistent.
None of the other receptions had suggested an all-night event. And so I think in some situations, depending upon what it is, if you had a Boy Scout troop that wanted to spend the night at their facility, if you had a school wanting to host an after-night prom party, it depends on what the use is as to whether or not it would be appropriate. Therefore, we wouldn't feel comfortable recommending that, you know, a blanket approval for all-night permits. But I think if it went to the county commission and had public notice and the neighbors are involved, then I think some events might be seen as appropriate for approval.
So what would that process entail? How long would it take?
To the county commission, they meet every week, but it would be, I believe, a 20-day notification period. So you have to get the letters out to the neighboring property owners with 20 days prior. So you're probably looking at a
20 days prior to the meeting or the
yes,
event?
To the meeting, so that they could come to the county commission if they had any concerns or questions. So I think a month, pr- prior to the event would be probably the time it would take to do the notice and to get it on the county commission agenda. It may be slightly less, but.
Any other questions for Mary? Great, thank you. Is the applicant here for a presentation? Come on up.
I'm Steve Enright. And just want to thank Mary for working with me so much on this. There was one thing I didn't know if I got back with you, Mary. We talked about 150 people, but really it was going to be 200. I think I messed up on that letter, if that's. And the only thing I think everything's good except the dust control. We didn't want to get caught in with spraying the calcium chloride because that can get into thousands of dollars. But we can put water on before each event. Of course, if it's raining or whatever, we won't. We're going to work with the fire department on another entrance, and we also have a 20,000 gallon tank that they can also use for other problems too, to get more water. And that's about it, I think.
Okay, great. Any questions for the applicant at this time? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
This is a public hearing item. Does anyone from the public wishes to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back. Commissioner Finkeldey.
Just want to be clear, from staff's position, condition, that's what I'm looking for, the condition that says the owner shall apply dust preventative measures, water's okay under that provision. That doesn't need to be changed to specifically. I assume so. I just wanted to be sure.
Okay.
I think as long as it reflects in the minutes that we are all assuming that water is okay, that would be good. And it says as needed.
Commissioner Harris.
Well, I'm inclined to vote in favor of this. I think staff has worked really well with the applicant to address the kinds of concerns that you can have at a facility like this. And I really like the creative solution of going to the county commission for overnight activities, which could take place there and that, you know, could get out of control with wrong circumstances. So I think that's a great solution. And I'm ready to make a motion if nobody else has. I'll move to approve this CUP as amended, subject to the staff recommendations and their recent revisions.
Second. Seconded by Commissioner Carter. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Motion carries 9-0, student in the affirmative. Thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
All right. Item number 5 is Mary. You kind of got some ideas for us. You want to run by us on the text amendment for environmentally sensitive lands.
Mary Miller, planner, and staff has been working the past few months to develop a density incentive to encourage protection of environmentally sensitive lands above that which is required by code. And the current language requires that environmentally sensitive lands in residentially zoned districts be protected up to a maximum of 20% of the entire site. And it also states that density can be calculated on the entire site, even the protected area, and then transferred over to the non-protected area, as long as the standards in the code are met, such as the minimum lot area and lot widths. Many times it may not be possible to achieve this amount of density, you know, given the lot area requirements. And after reviewing the density incentives used by some other communities, we've developed a draft of density bonus incentives that were listed in the memo. There are a greater number of units possible or a greater development area could be possible. And one issue that we mentioned was the need to remain compliant with our comprehensive plan. And therefore, when we recommend density bonus, this may put you above the limit that is recommended. For instance, low density is recommended to max out at 6 units per acre. If you're in the RS7 district where you have 7,000 square feet lots, you're already at 6.2 units an acre. So any density bonus possibly could put you over what the comprehensive plan recommends for low density. That would seldom happen. Typically, when we get a development plan in, they're not able to develop at the maximum density. Even though it's 7,000 square feet would equal 6 units per acre, there's road right-of-way, there's drainage easements. Sometimes the lot width is, or the lot depth is deeper, so we seldom see them developing to the maximum density possible. But we would recommend revising the comp plan to set a density cap so that it could be exceeded in those cases where they actually are able to develop at maximum density. And another change that would need to be made that we'd recommend would be an amendment to Section 20-601A of the Development Code, the density and dimensional standards for the residential districts. If we went with the density bonuses, those standards would need to be revised, and that could be done with just a footnote to the table saying that, you know, these could be revised per the table in Article 11 when density bonuses are applied. And I just plan on going through an example. The example in your memo was one where the cap was exceeded because we were using the RS7 district. So I was going to go through an example where you would not exceed your cap and that you could do the density bonus. For this example, I'm using 48 acres, and the little grids, each one of those is an acre. We're assuming 50% of the site has sensitive lands, which would be 24 acres, and they would be required to protect 20%, or the 9.6 acres. However, when they come in, the way this is supposed to work, and we assume it would work, is the developer would come in with their plans and they would show us the amount of area they would like to preserve above that which is required. In this case, I'm pretending they said they wanted to preserve 40% or 19.2 acres. The first step would be to calculate your base density. You would look at the RS5 district. You have 20% required for protection, which is 9.6 acres, and I'm just pulled it in out of my head that 3 acres might be required for right-of-way. So for this example, we would have 12.6 acres unavailable for development, or 35.4 acres available for development. That would equal about 1.5 million square feet. And when you do your base density, you just divide the amount of square feet you have by 5,000 square feet to get 308 units. In actuality, the applicant should prepare a plan which would show what they intend to develop, and then we'd be able to see the actual number of units they expect to be able to develop. And then you would calculate your density bonus, which would be the number of units that you could go by. Exceed 40% protected means they're protecting an additional 20% of area, which would result in a 20% increase in dwelling units. 308 dwelling units were originally permitted with the base density. 20% would be 61 additional. So therefore, with the density bonus, 369 dwelling units could be possible on this property. So then we would compare that with the cap. In the comprehensive plan, the medium density has a cap between 7 and 15 dwelling units per acre. So the density cap would be 15 dwelling units an acre. With the density bonus, they could have 369 units per acre. And when we calculate the density cap times the acreage, the density, the maximum density allowed with the density cap would be 531 units. Therefore, they would be able to do this density bonus and still remain under the cap. And this is just a simple illustration of a case where this would not work. It would be in the next zoning district, the RS3. We take the same area. The RS3 zoning districts permits 3,000 square foot lots. So in this case, your base density would be 514 lots. The density bonus, the 20%, would be 102 additional lots, which would be 616 dwelling units, but the density cap is set at 531 dwelling units. And then I wanted to verify that it would even be possible to get that number of units, 616, in the RS3 district. What would the lots need to look like? And actually, there's a 25-foot minimum lot width in RS3 and 3,000 square feet area, which would result in 120 feet deep lots. If that lot depth was reduced to 100 foot, you could get the 616 dwelling units. You know, whether we'd want the cap to be that high for this particular district or not. Yeah. the cap could be set lower, but this would illustrate how adjusting the cap would make it possible in the RS3 and the RS7 zoning districts. Districts that are already at nearly the maximum level could actually have a density bonus. The second type of density bonus is the developable area. There's no increase in number of units. It just increases the size of the structures or the amount of impervious surface that would be possible. So we have the same property. I didn't do any calculations, but that just shows what the bonuses would be. Based on the table, for every percent increase, you can get a percent increase in building area or impervious surface, or a percent increase decrease in setbacks or required outdoor area to result end up with a more developable area. And this might be, you know, something that the RS3 district, they seem to be really a dense built-up district anyway. I would not recommend using the two bonuses together. You would either get more units or a more developable area is what staff would recommend. But these are just kind of what we've worked out, preliminary on density incentive bonuses, and we just wanted to know if that was the direction you wanted to move in, and if so, if you wanted to initiate the comprehensive plan amendment to perhaps permit higher densities when density bonuses are applied, and the development code amendment to add the footnote to the density and dimensional table for the residential districts, that those standards might be revised when density bonuses are applied.
Thank you, Mary. You guys want to do the public comment first, and then we'll discuss, or you guys have questions at this point? Go for the public. Okay. Public comment. Hank, did you bring any wisdom this evening?
Here to watch and listen.
Okay. And we'll close public comment. Okay, Commissioner Harris, yes.
First, a question for you, Mary. Why do you recommend using one tool or the other and not any combination?
Because with the one tool, with the density bonus, we're assuming we'd need to reduce lot area or the lot width. And if you reduce the lot area and lot width and increase the amount of building coverage, I don't see us having the amount of green space we would need on those lots.
You're saving a whole bunch more green space somewhere, though.
I guess when you say that, what I'm envisioning is a smaller lot, so less impervious surface, more height. So.
Right, and in the single family districts, more height wouldn't help you get your developable area or increase your number of units. So if you reduce your size from 7,000 square foot lot to 5,000 square foot lots, and then you also increase the amount of the lot that can be covered, I don't know if you're changing the character of the RS7 district dramatically, mm-hmm. which may not be an issue. That if you want to pursue that, we could look into combining the two density bonuses.
I'm not sure what I think, but I wanted to hear what you thought. Thanks.
Commissioner Finkelde.
You said that you looked at some other communities that have done this.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of curiosity, I wondered if we could get examples from these communities where someone has actually used this density and kind of see what it looks like. And I mean, if they happen to have any, maybe no one's used it. But if they had one, you could see, you know, maybe we'd have a staff report or some example from another community that might help illustrate it.
Okay.
Just out of curiosity, how many other communities did you find that are using this? Is this?
I found three. Two were just noted in a kind of like a law report on the PACE website. Their ordinances are reported. And then one, I actually found their ordinance that they used, but I haven't found any examples, but that would be a good idea.
Just that would be neat to see.
Commissioner Rasmussen.
Mary, why would Horizon 2020 have to be amended?
Well, for instance, with our neighborhood plans, they go in and designate areas for low density and medium density. And if it's a low density and you're RS10 and you get your bonus, you just go to RS7, you're still low density. But if you're at RS7 and you were able to develop at your maximum density and your bonus put you up to the medium density, then you're not compliant with the comp plan. As far as the neighborhood plans, now you actually are medium density.
I guess I want to follow that up with, is the Horizon 2020 comprehensive plan requirements or guidelines? Because I feel like I've heard both answers many times. So are they hard and fast requirements, or are they guidelines?
They're only guidelines unless they're adopted into the regulations. So the Horizon 2020 is a guideline, and the development code is the regulation. And so...
Okay, so if they're just guidelines, why would you have to go back and revise them?
I believe...
If we're going to have an environmental chapter in Horizon 2020... that would probably have some sort of language in there that we offer a density bonus for developers that protect environmentally sensitive lands. Why do we have to go in and revise other parts of it?
I believe it's based on one part, how long would the environmental chapter take to be adopted? And the other part is it strengthens your recommendations and your guidelines, I think, if you make them more compliant with what your regulations are.
And to tag on to that, we're not the only folks that are using Horizon 2020. You know, property owners that are looking to purchase property may come and look at it and read it and say, okay, this is a low density area. This is where I want to live. And if there's the potential for there to be higher densities in some circumstances, then we haven't given them the full breadth of that information if we don't amend the plan. So, you know, we also use it every time we have a rezoning request. You know, we use that recommendation to help us make a recommendation to you in terms of whether what's being requested is consistent with that. So there may be some places where it's not reasonable to have that additional density. You know, it would be way out of character. There may be other places because of the environmentally sensitive areas that it would be reasonable, but it seems like the comp plan should at least identify that as the potential so that property owners know that going in.
I would add the reverse is true. I mean, besides the people, I mean, there could be developers out there who are looking around, and if they see, oh, well, I'm not going to build there because, and then they read it and say, ah, but if I protect this land and I can build nicer houses or I can build my business and have this nice backdrop and keep all that nice land, all those nice trees, and get a bonus from it, I'm going to look at this piece of property when otherwise. So, I mean, I think it's important to have it in there. I think in the perfect world, you'll certainly have it in the environmental chapter, but I think it's important to have it in there.
Another question?
Yeah, Commissioner
Rasmussen. On page 2 in the applicability paragraph, you say that regulatory floodways and historical sites would not be included in the density bonus program because their protection's already required. Could you explain that?
Just using an example, if you saw a property that was 50% regulatory floodway, our floodplain regulations prohibit building in the floodway to begin with. And I know we have in our environmentally protective standards, they require 20% be protected. That was in the code before we changed it. And we're still keeping the floodway as a protected property. But to actually give a density bonus when you're protecting something that's required to be protected outside of our regulations, it doesn't seem like a wise use of the incentive.
But if your floodway was part of the initial 20%, say in your example up there, that wouldn't count in that initial 20% area?
It would count in the original 20. Yes, if floodway was 20% of your property and then another 20% were trees and you protected all 40%, you've got your 20% that's required, and you've got the priority list in the Article 11, and floodway is number one, I believe, on that priority list. So that would be the required protected area. And then if they wanted to protect the trees in addition, your density bonus would apply. But if they had a property that was almost all floodway, and they said, we'll protect another 20% of the floodway, then rewarding that with additional density.
Okay, because that wasn't clear. I wasn't sure if that was excluding it from the full 40%.
I see.
Or what.
That should be clarified.
And then our regulatory floodway fringe, stream corridors, and stands of mature trees currently, what's the word? Defined already in our code. So they're in there. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Student commissioner.
I have a question. Does the preserved area have to be consecutive at all to get the density bonuses?
No, I believe when you look at the property, you'd probably want the areas to be consecutive, but I can imagine there'd be a property that might have 20% of stream corridor on one corner and mature stands of trees on the other corner. And so if they protected both of those, I think they would still qualify for the bonus. I think it's something we'd look at when, in our text amendment, we have a provision called a sensitive area site plan where they show what's on the site and what needs to be protected. And at that time, we'd really would look at it and say the contiguous areas would be most important. But we wouldn't, sometimes if you just don't have contiguous areas, you might actually have a stream corridor on one corner and on the other corner would both need to be protected.
Mary, this may be getting the cart before the horse, but what will this look like? I'm just thinking as an appraiser, if I go in and I realize, well, this doesn't comply to the zoning and don't pick up on the density, I mean, is it a PRD? I mean, what's this going to look like say you have this property with 120 apartment units and it exceeds, I mean, I don't know. How are we going to implement this?
For instance, on the zoning map, when we greater density, that's a very good question. I imagine we'd want to identify it in some way, I think, and I hadn't thought of that, but.
Because I'd see it could be problematic for property owner. I mean, there's got to be some way that an individual could pick it out pretty quickly that it is.
Right, it would be important, I think, for staff, too, looking back at other properties or trying to answer questions. It would be very important to identify it on the map as a density bonus area.
Yeah. Okay. And I like Commissioner Finkeldey's idea. I'd just like to see something you can see and touch, kind of. And I mean, I appreciate your numbers and your examples, but it'd be kind of neat just to see what's been done, perhaps. Commissioner Finkeldey.
I can't
think of an example sitting here, but I'm thinking there might be other applications if we like the way density bonuses work, and I'm not sure, besides environmentally protected lands, I can't think of where it would be at the moment, but let's say, but can you guys either one think of another way, or two, when we do the comp plan amendment, are we only going to say environmentally sensitive density bonuses are okay, or just density bonuses are okay?
In the example I used, they had three bonuses, and I can only remember the other one was affordable housing, if you had affordable housing.
There you go.
And I can't remember the third one, but they had three items, and then they would total up the bonus and see if you fit in with the cap. So I think in the comp plan, we would just want to say when density bonus applies, that way it leaves it open.
Yeah, affordable housing. That's a good example.
Yeah, we need more of that, and if you could incentivize it, you might get more of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, maybe when we do the comp plan, we think keep it broad enough to see if we can come up with any other uses. I guess we kind of have mixed use. We have some bonuses in the mixed use category, but I'm not sure they're really all density bonuses. There's some height variations and stuff, parking variations, but good. Thank you.
I think it's a real good start on leading towards an incentivized ordinance to encourage protection of environmentally sensitive lands, but reward those that do that through something that's going to put more money in their pocket somehow. It seems to be a win-win for the community and the developer.
Any other?
Lisa.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Harris.
I like the concept in general, but in the first example that Mary gave, it just felt a little much to me to have that many more units allowed for saving the land there. And the league, I'm closer to the league's position on that, that if you could build the number of units that would be allowed if you didn't save any of the land, on the land that's left if you saved as much as you could, that's a pretty darn good thing. You wouldn't be out anything. Now, a little bonus above that would be just extra incentive to go that way than to tear down those trees, which is good. But all those number of units that Mary talked about seemed too much for me. And one concern I have about that is that if you put very dense development next to sensitive features, you can compromise the quality of those features. You have to be very careful about how you do that. So I would be in favor of something that provides a modest bonus, a significant one, one that would actually trigger what we want to see, but that is not more than is, I think, is reasonable. And then just to follow up with another thought, I'd like to see prairies on that list too. Even if the environmentally sensitive code doesn't have prairies in there, why not have people who would want to save a prairie use this as a tool to do that?
We can put that back in. We had prairies. We can put that back in. And also, I think if I bring an example back next time, what I'd like to do is get some plans that show what density developments normally develop at. For instance, if we have RS7 development, what density does it actually develop at? And that might help us be able to get some real examples of what the bonus would be and maybe see how it should be adjusted to be more reasonable.
That would be helpful.
Yeah. Commissioner Carter, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I agree with Commissioner Harris's comment about adding prairies in. That'd be great. And also, or the point she brought up regarding the number of units in the example you used, I forgot I had a question about that too. The number that you gave, that's the max they could go to under that scenario. But that's still with having to provide the adequate parking and all the other things that come with that number of units. So it's not terribly likely to get to that particular number, is it? I mean,
well, the examples I used were the RS district because that's when I see density being most difficult. If you're in the RM district, you can sometimes add height, and yeah, parking would be a limiting factor to some degree.
Okay, that was all I had.
Commissioner Finkeldine.
I do agree with Commissioner Harris that, yeah, if we're giving people incentives, you know, I think you're adding in the prairies and even as the leak says, steep slopes, you know, if we're encouraging and archaeological and historic sites, I mean, you know, there's no reason not to incentivize people to protect those. I think as part of an incentive program, I think it's much harder when, you know, as we've gone down this path before to make that part of the requirement. But if it's easy when it's part of the incentive, I think. Second, I mean, to Commissioner Harris's point on if that's too much or too little, I think the examples would help us too. If we can happen to find some examples that use this, you know, something similar, we can see how it actually worked out in application. That might make us either like or dislike it better. But again, if there might not be a lot of examples out there, but if we can find a few, it could help us.
Rasmussen?
I guess it's all in the eye of the beholder. I didn't feel it was overly generous. So I don't necessarily think it has to be scaled way back. I would ask, have you gotten some feedback from anybody in town who does developing work? Have you met, did you email this to Land Plan or something like that? It's just, it's public noticed. I guess they could look at it, but it might be helpful to get some feedback from a couple of the developers. Do they think they'd even use something like this? Are they interested?
That's a good point. You, Commissioner Blazer.
I would agree with Prairies, but I'm not sure about steep slopes. I think, haven't we taken steep slopes out of the environmental chapter as far as being protected?
I don't think we've taken them out, but I think we have acknowledged that you can build sensitively on slopes.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't agree with Commissioner Finkeldye about steep slopes, but I would agree with Prairies, adding that back in or putting it in.
And Commissioner Blazer, let me just ask you though, I mean, my thought here is it's not going to be put back into the requirement, but let's say someone has a 20% floodway and 10% steep slopes, and they say, well, I want to choose, I could build on those steep slopes, but I choose not to build on those steep slopes if you give me an incentive. If you don't give me the incentive, I'm going to build on the steep slopes. So someone could say, well, you can build on it so they shouldn't have an incentive, but my theory would be if you're already protecting your 20%, you want to protect extra steep slopes, I mean, 10% steep slopes. We should encourage that, even, you know, though it's not required. We couldn't require them to protect those steep slopes, but we could encourage them to do so. Does that make a difference, Commissioner Blazer? Or you just don't think they should be protected at all?
No.
There should be no incentive to protect them. Okay, well, that's fair.
Well, I agree with Commissioner Finkeldy. I mean, I think if it's just one more thing that you can incentivize a developer with, I mean, I don't know if you just want to discount it initially. I mean, I'd be for having steep slopes included, but Commissioner Rasmussen, did you?
Well, I just think that we're having a hard time in the environmental chapter of Horizon 2020 to identifying what a steep slope is. It's kind of bounced around percent-wise. Right now it's saying above 15%, but we still haven't had a good explanation as to why 15%. I mean, I thought I've heard that, say, if you wanted a rock-out basement, you might want 15% or even more. If you wanted an earth home, you might want 15% or more. And so why would we be trying to stop development on that type of slope? How would that have impacted any of the development on Mount Oread? What's the slope there? So I think it's something we're still discussing in the environmental.
Okay, now you've convinced me. I mean, I think that's something to look at. I think we want to look at that as it goes forward. I hadn't considered that possibility. But I think we want to, if we can incentivize, you know, extra protections, I think we want to try. I mean, we're incentivizing it, so let's. But again, we still have to be able to define it. And so I could go both ways on that, I guess. But generally speaking, I would prefer a broader incentive, I guess.
Well, along that thought, do we have a clear definition of prairies? Is it just what is registered with the state?
We have one of our I believe we had one in one of our draft languages that one of the ecological consulting firms gave us that
would clearly define a natural prairie. Commissioner Harrison.
A question about what a jurisdictional wetland is. Is that a natural wetland or could it be a mitigated built wetland?
A jurisdictional wetland is one that's under the jurisdiction of the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers, and it's under Clean Water Act 404, and they have specific types
primarily they have to be navigable waters of the United States. And so they're most of the wetlands in the U.S. They're not necessarily the isolated wetlands. There's several wetlands that are not continual, part of a continual navigable area. And so they state jurisdictional wetlands to, it's pretty
wetlands
easy to define which those are.
Waters. Wetlands are waters of the U.S. There's a difference between the two, wetlands or waters of the U.S. as opposed to navigable waters.
Well, I guess my question is, could it be a man-made wetland?
Well, it depends if you can mitigate a jurisdictional wetland, and I assume then your mitigated wetland would be jurisdictional. For instance, like with the Haskell wetlands, where they've mitigated it, I think that would still remain a jurisdictional wetland under the, they couldn't fill it. The Army Corps would still need to be contacted, so.
Okay, thank you.
The simple answer to Commissioner Harris's question is yes, because you can build a man-made wetland that is hydrologically connected to a navigable waterway, and then it will become a regulated wetland under the scope of the Corps of Engineers, okay. EPA.
Thank you.
In our environmental chapter in Horizon 2020, we're also talking about protecting not just stands of mature trees, but the native prairie, natural habitats, open space, view sheds, maybe, and high quality agricultural land. And I guess if we're going to incentivize preserving areas, we should think about including some of those that we're talking about in the environmental chapter. I would suggest.
Concur.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments? Mary, do you feel empowered?
I think I have my work cut out for me. I'll get some examples and.
Can we put the blindfold on you and spin you around a few times?
I think this is pretty neat. This could be, you know, something that you get to give a presentation on at APA in the next year or two.
There you go.
That's a great start.
Mm-hmm. So you want us to move to initiate some of this now?
Or just
or wait
if,
until
if you want to wait for the examples.
Well, we can always initiate it, and if we okay, Sheila's looking at me.
Actually, this is still part of the work in progress on these text amendments, so I don't think you need to actually initiate. We just wanted direction or confirmation if we were headed in the right direction.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you. Any new or old business before the commission? Any general public comment, Commissioner Finkelbeck?
Commissioner Harris and I were just talking earlier, and John, can you remind me why we got rid of our consent agenda? I mean, I was thinking about these first couple items on the agenda tonight. It seems like when I started, we had consent agendas, and it seems like those first two could have been on a consent agenda, but we did away with them for a reason. I can't remember why.
You haven't done away with it. It's the lack of development. The things that were consent agenda items were the non-public hearing items, so previously it was preliminary plats or final development plans, and because you have not had many of those.
Is that in our bylaws? I mean, like this initiation of the Horizon 2020, it would seem to me that could be a consent agenda item. I mean, I was glad Todd was here, but it would seem that you could have done that one. And the rezoning, obviously, is a public hearing item, and so maybe you can't consent a public hearing item.
No.
Okay, but the Horizon 2020 initiation, I'm just talking out loud, it just seems like we could have.
Yeah, that probably could have been, although we might need to check the bylaws to see if we call that out as a public hearing item.
Yeah. And I don't know about the minimum maintenance roads. Obviously,
that's,
we had someone
that's
here.
A public hearing item.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other business? Reminder, we do not meet Wednesday. No. Seeing none, we will adjourn for the month of February.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. He's coming down this way.
Brad.
pretty amazing.
We had a consent agenda about 3 months ago.
Hey, man, how's it going? Welcome